I really want to thank April Gallup for coming on with us today to first tell her story of what happened then and the fight she's going through right now. April, it's great to have you on the show with us.
Thank you for having me, Alex.
You bet. Start at the beginning, who you were, what you were doing there, what happened that day, and then now what's happened after. All the key issues, please.
Okay. September 11, 2001, I was returning back from maternity leave, and with that comes getting situated. I was asked to take care of some paperwork prior to taking my son to daycare. So I said, yes, of course, to do what they said. But honestly, I didn't think that they were actually going to clear my son to get through. But somehow on that particular day, he was able to get cleared to go in the back with me. When I sat down at the desk, I pulled out the keyboard. I went to touch the computer. And as soon as I touched the button, boom. And then, of course, the rest is history. Now, from an insider's perspective, because it happened simultaneously, when I touched the keyboard when I touched the button on the screen, I thought I triggered something. I mean, that's just, you know, by virtue of what took place.
Yeah, that was probably just a coincidence, because when I was covering a Bilderberg group meeting a few months ago, right as I go to open the door to go back in the room, and there was a TV crew inside, right as I open the door, right as I start cracking it, the alarm goes off, and I'm like, "My God, what did I touch?" I started saying, "Rob, what did you touch?" But it wasn't that. It just so happened to happen right as I turned the door, right as I swiped the key, and right as I pushed it down, it happened. So you hit the keyboard right when you get to work. Boom. Okay. Continue. You're at the Pentagon. Supposedly, an aircraft just slammed into it.
Right, and of course, being on the inside, there were no alarms, no hints. With everything that was going on, and they're always watching, you know, news around the world 24/7 in the Pentagon, there were no alarms, no hints, no warnings, nothing. So, you know, that was another wow. How come? And of course, you know, I eventually came to, and we got out of the debris. And I locked my shoes, and I bring this part up very crucial, because I walked barefooted out with my son. And I didn't see, you know, various types of debris or, you know, anything to that nature that would cause me to think, wow, that wasn't a bomb, that was a plane. So I was quite surprised. And then when I was told, and as I continued to relive the incident, I tried to see how was it possible. You know, I tried to rationalize the situation after I was given the information.
Yeah, let's go back and walk through this slowly. I mean, describe. You're in there with your newborn baby. You've just brought him into the Pentagon. Right as you sit down to go to work, a huge explosion. You know, what are you seeing in there? I mean, you describe not seeing plane debris or luggage or people or anything. What are you seeing? I mean, there's images of inside the Pentagon where it's just sheer blown out and cut, and there's still computers and desks sitting there untouched, but the plane just disappears.
Right. I mean, you could see that there were, you could see where the inside the computer, they were still burning. I guess stuff, I don't know what the inside of the stuff in the ceiling was. That it all came down. There was still some office, I don't know if it was desk, equipment, whatever it was all piled on top of each other. So it seemed it was more like we were blown and then covered under just debris. The metal desks weren't moved that much from what I saw, but that was it.
Now, you were right along the line of the explosion there. Your office from that outer ring, where was your office along that line of the first several rings that got penetrated by the projectile?
Right. We were right there, what they would consider as the ground zero. We were in the first corridor E ring, fifth floor.
So you had an outside seat then. You were right up on the edge of the ring.
Right. So we were right there. I don't know if, you know, I try to rationalize that the blast gave us when we got blown a little bit. I mean, I really don't know.
but you didn't see any aircraft or any smoking aluminum or any dead bodies burning up. It was just, in fact, how big were the fires? We have the video of it. They look pretty small, and it's pretty clean, 16 foot.
They weren't, I guess when you try to get yourself together, maybe in the beginning it might seem that things seemed a little bit exaggerated because, again, you don't know what's happening.
Oh, no, it was terrible. You're in there and a big explosion.
You're like, right. You know, you hear this baby crying. You're wondering what's going on.
Thank God your baby was okay. I mean, how's your baby doing all that?
Well, again, he had his, it was rough, and you know, in the beginning because he was so young and his head was all soft and tender. So there was that period we went through with that. But again, he had stopped crying, and so that's what made me get out from under the debris. Because the other young lady that was in there, she's like, get your baby. And I'm like, oh, that's my baby. Because, you know, you're out of sorts. You're present, but then you're not. It's like it's real, but then it's really, it doesn't feel real.
Yeah.
So, you know, even
now,
today,
Now, where did you climb out? And then after you climbed out, did you see the entry hole of the weapon?
Technically, they're claiming that the area that we came out of, that we walked out of, was supposed to have been the, this was the, trying to think of the name of the office that did the scaling of where everybody was located. They said what we came out of was the entry hole. I don't know. I know I came out of a big gaping hole, and when I came out, it felt like, you know, somebody had taken a hammer and beat me from my head all the way down to my body, so I collapsed on the grass.
Now, how big was that hole?
It wasn't that big.
Mm.
It really wasn't that big.
Big passenger liner. I mean, even if it hit, its engines would have hit, you know, 20 yards out, 15 yards out. You would have seen those smash up or make holes, but it didn't. It was just this 16-foot hole. And, you know, later they came in and dumped sand everywhere in front of it to make it look like it was worse. And you got some spools there, and the grass is doing just fine. And you climb out
right.
of this burning 16-foot hole. And then later they spray water on it, and the top collapses in a little bit. But still, that's only about 20 feet across.
Right. But even, you know, when I was coming out and I was about to collapse, they grabbed me on both sides of my arm. And they caught Elijah, but then the guy who had my right arm, he went back in. So I said, "Wow, how was he able to do that with that jet fuel?" And you know, based off the official story.
And this is just a few minutes after it happens. There's people,
I mean, right after.
And there's people just going in, but the jet fuel burned and melted all the plane and burned all the bodies. But they're just going right in there. It's no problem.
Right. I mean, back and forth.
Now, please continue. April?
Yes?
Okay, I was saying, please continue with your story.
Okay, I'm sorry to hear you.
That's okay.
And so, you know, again, it seemed real, but then it didn't. But it was, you know, a moment. And it was a very pivotal moment. And I spent a lot of time trying to comprehend the whole situation. But I wind up being at a local hospital. I did wind up eventually going to the hospital, but they separated me and my son. And later that night, or maybe it was after midnight, or maybe early that next morning, somebody brought my wallet. And in my wallet was my ID card and my son's ID card. So then they brought me and my, they put it together. But we were still in this triage-type setting because it was a room full of other people. And couple of hours later from that, not that I was keeping up with the sense of time or anything, someone came in, and that's when they said, "Do you know what happened?" And I said, "Well, no, not really. I thought maybe I triggered something." And then they said, "This is what happened." And then that was it. It wasn't like they were, "How are you? Are you okay? How's your kid?" I mean, it was nothing like that. It was just more of, this is what happened.
Well, April, I want to go over the story very carefully here after the break. We really appreciate you joining us. But did you know now there's all these videos of minutes after the towers fall of guys in baseball caps professionally walking around saying the same thing about, well, you know, the plane went in with all that jet fuel and went out the other side, and it caused such incredible heat on the structural weakened the girders, and it, you know, fell from a structural weakening, of course, but said it all professionally. Then the news all repeated it, and now we know at the Pentagon and at the World Trade Centers, guys would go around saying, this is what you saw. You didn't see bombs going off. You didn't see that. You know, and with Building 7, they told the cops, you didn't hear us say we were going to blow that up. So when we come back, I want to specifically go back in every detail you can tell us about who this person was, how they were dressed, what they looked like, what they said to you. I mean, imagine you're laying there in a bed. Why should they care about somebody at the Pentagon who her and her baby were hit? I mean, they know it's a plane. Everybody knows, you know. Why go to an eyewitness and say, hi, you're awake now, dear. Let me tell you what you just saw. Okay, let's get this real straight right now with you. Just like they had all the guys on the streets going, giving a same script out. And BBC reporting Building 7 had fallen exactly as it did later fall, 25 minutes before it fell. Both BBC channels and CNN. I mean, folks, the facts are the facts. They did it. That's how dangerous these people are. I'll be right back with April Gallup and tell you the rest of her story. She needs our support. Go over as much detail as you can.
Well, the gentleman didn't identify his name. He was with other military. There was like one person in a Navy uniform and one in an Army uniform. But the gentleman who spoke was just in regular clothing. He didn't really say, hi, I'm so-and-so. It wasn't that like, how you doing? I'm so-and-so. You know, I'm with. He never identified organization or.
No, he's a spook. He's the kind of guy that launches missiles into buildings. He's a bloodthirsty spook, killer spook. And he's there to let you know, young lady, this is what you saw. Isn't that right? Because I'm a hardcore soldier, and I understand collateral damage and sacrificing pawns, and you don't. So, I mean, he's there. What are the other guys doing? I mean, was he white? Was he black? I mean, describe him.
He was a Caucasian American, and he was accompanied by an African American, and I think the other woman was Asian American.
Okay, so the spook house is there, and you're saying they're in different branches of the military uniforms. Do you remember?
Yes, because after he left, the lady did come back, and she was saying that they were going around, you know, doing accountability because I had asked questions. I was like, well, wow. I mean, you know, are you going to ask if I'm okay? Or, I mean, well, who are you? You know? And so nobody said anything. He just said what he had to say, and that was it. So then she came back, and then she just said, hey, we have to do accountability and make sure we know where all the military people are.
Exactly. It's like, smooth that over with her. That one might ask
right.
questions. Now, I mean, by then, are you wondering why you're seeing on the news, or had you watched the news at a flight?
No, I had not seen the news. I had not seen the news till about two more days later. So I think I saw the news maybe the 14th or the 15th. Because at that time, of course, we're getting evaluations. Because immediately the military does the investigation to determine who's at fault or if you caused part of your accident. So immediately, investigations began. So immediately, I went into investigation.
Well, let's stop and go back, and then we'll go forward into investigation. What mm-hmm. specifically did he say to you? What did he say? He said, here's what you saw. I'm going to tell you what you saw. What did he say?
Specifically?
Mm-hmm.
He said, what do you think happened? And I said, oh, well, I thought maybe I triggered something because as soon as I touched the button on the computer, boom. He was like, no. This is what happened, and that was it. It wasn't what he was elaborating, or it wasn't additional.
It was just
blank, straight to the point.
April, what did he tell you happened? What did he say happened?
That some terrorists had hijacked the plane that ran into, or crashed into the Pentagon.
Now, have you ever talked to others? Because this story comes up with other emergency workers that showed up, people in the that these men would show up and say, this is what you saw. Is that clear? Did you ever talk to anybody else who told you similar stories?
No, I hadn't. No, I hadn't talked to anybody.
Okay. Now, you said you immediately went into the investigation phase. Please continue.
Yeah, what happened is when you're in the military, regardless first of all, the Pentagon, you're selected to come there. So not everybody gets to go to the Pentagon. You're selected to come there. But it doesn't matter if you're still active duty military. They begin investigations to determine if any part of that incident was your fault. And so then you have to get, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally evaluated, and then they investigate the incident to determine who's at fault. And so that began right away. And from there, they say, yeah, this is what happened. None of it is your fault. Or they say, this happened, but part of this is your fault. That type of thing.
All right, let's talk about that investigation. Long segment coming up with our guest, April Gallup. She survived with her newborn son in the Pentagon, where she held a top secret clearance with the SCI, with the U.S. Army. So we're going to go right back to her after the break and break down what she witnessed and what she saw and what she thinks about the official 9/11 fairy tale. Because I want you to be able to tell whatever part of the story you want. You've told us up to this point. Then they start the, quote, investigation. In the 20 minutes we've got left, roughly, run through then the rest of the story. And, boy, is there a lot of it left. And then tell us your take on what really happened on 9/11, being one of the victims of it.
Well, it's a long story because, again, it's been a long journey, and we're still battling in 2008. And the investigations remain ongoing, and because every so many months during the medical evaluations, the paperwork would get lost. And so then you'd have to start all over again and begin the process all over again. And so it stayed that way for many, many years. And then during one point in my medical eval, they were pretty much explaining to me that it wasn't appropriate to share that my son had been in the building that particular day and had gotten hurt. And then I thought it was unusual when I asked, well, what in the world am I supposed to say? Who am I supposed to say, you know, was hurt him? I mean, what in the world was I supposed to say? And a lot of these incidences are so memorable because you wonder, how do you tell someone that? Or how do you come in a hospital and someone's laid out and say, this is what happened, and never ask, well, how are you? Are you
when
okay?
Did you start to get suspicious about it not being an airplane that hit the Pentagon?
Well, because I, you know, when I was finally told, then I started asking questions because of where I worked. This was the Pentagon, supposedly one of the most secure buildings in all of the United States of America. And when you think about the budget, the technology, and things to that effect, my rationale was how on one particular day, nothing was functional and nothing was operational on that particular day. I just was thinking, what was the odds? And then, wow, jet fuel? You know, then I looked up, you know, the jet fuel, what the impact would be like. And then I began to question, well, how in the world, if this happened, how in the world are we not ashes?
Well, let's go back. Yeah, I mean, the plane burns up. You're right in the hit zone, but doesn't hurt you or, you know, hurt you, but doesn't burn you up or your son, thank God. And then later they start trying to pressure you about being wrong, even speaking to your friends and others about it before you were even really speaking out about 9/11 itself being a fraud. Did they start pressuring you to shut up, or when you started asking questions, what did they say about this?
Well, I started to go in public, and then there were times where there were just particular comments being made as far as, is it wise for me to say particular things when I am trying to get through, you know, these investigations.
So that's how the whole military is. They're always investigating. They're always saying you've done something wrong. So they have something to hang over your head. So now they're intimidating you. Be quiet because you're under investigation.
I mean, it wouldn't be, for operative, it wouldn't be wise to just go up to somebody and say, well, you know, if you do this, we're going to do this. It's another method. It's more of, it's a more subtle yet direct method. Like, is it wise for you to be doing this while you're trying to get, you know, your medical eval, your medical releases? And it, just more, or, we don't think it's appropriate if you discuss that your child, a minor, was, you know, in this particular area during this particular time. Then they changed it and said, well, weren't you there letting him visit people? And I said, well, now, it was an inadvertent way of saying, well, why don't you, instead of just saying, well, why don't you tell people you were there, you know, visiting and showing around, instead they say, well, why weren't you there letting him visit people? And I said, well, how do you get inside the Pentagon? How do you clear your child and get inside the Pentagon so you can show him off? That's just not possible.
Well, let's go back now. You know, yeah, you had said that nothing was working that day. Break down what wasn't working that day, the stand down of Pentagon security.
Well, I mean, with you, if you sit down and you do your homework and you look at the money that's spent, when you go back and you go back maybe 4 years prior and you look at the Department of Defense budget and you look at the money that's spent, so this building can be deemed the most secure building in all of the United States of America. And then you look at how in the world was a plane even able to get within a certain radius of the building?
Now, they admit they have missiles, anti-aircraft missiles, guns, all of this, always ringing it. And then we know that day Dick Cheney ordered a stand down.
All right. I mean, so you have to say, you know, that leads to more questions. You got to understand, you know, everybody knows at this point that the official story was botched up. They know the official story was botched up. But, you know, there are certain things that lead to certain questions. You know, how do you spend this money in this building? And then on this particular day, nothing was functional, nothing was operational. And this building, the most secure one in all the United States, was able to get attacked. What's the probability of that? I mean, you have to really look at that. I mean, you really think about it. It doesn't have a very high probability of something like that happening, especially to
No, I agree. Now, give people a basic overview of your story, what this led to, lawyers, other things. I mean, hit all the key points.
I mean, when I was, you know, again, we, you know, then it went to, okay, something's got to be done. But I'm more of an effective type person. I'm not more of just talk. I try to find ways to get things done. So the first thing was I wanted to try to find a lawyer. But it was very hard because no one wanted to take the case. Then I started appealing to members of Congress.
Now, that means take the case. Then, tell people what you had a case about. I mean, specific.
Well, you know, it wasn't that it was clearly identified, because here you had the official story that was saying that it was a terrorist attack. However, there were so many questions out there that would lead you to believe otherwise.
And with legal action,
mm-hmm. you can get those documents, and then you can put the pieces of the puzzle together.
Exactly. So you really start investigating.
So the purpose of the lawsuit was to try to obtain a lawsuit. The purpose of it was the best way to get to the bottom of a situation is to litigate and have documents subpoenaed and obtained, and then that way you can piece together what is true, what is fact. This is what happened, this isn't what happened.
Yeah, I've done that before.
But, you know, it got, you know, one, it was really hard to try to find attorneys who would take it. We finally had two people now in 2008. So we're, you know, it's been a long standing. We thought the commission was going to do something other than what it did, but then that wind up being a disappointment. Finally, in 2008, we've had two wonderful attorneys, which we'll come back probably another time and talk about pursuing litigation options. And that's only because that's how you're going to get the information.
Well, I knew they were taking down Access TV on a smaller area and engaged in corruption. So I just sued them for one issue to get documents on another and caught them stealing, as I already knew they were doing, and sent the guy to Huntsville. So, but then it went up to the higher-level folks in the city, so they killed the investigation with only him going to prison, John Villarreal. But, yes, you're right. If you know there's dirt and then you've got one claim, it's good to start a lawsuit to get in to something and burrow in. It's, you know, it's a way to get in there and get the facts.
Right.
Now, let's be specific. You were there. You went through this. Have you ever had threats or intimidation after, other than trying to go after your job or not, you know, give you medical releases? You know, all other key points before the show ends.
It was you know, after that, and after the questions came, after I said there's no way I could possibly say my child wasn't there, after, you know, I said, well, okay, these are very valid questions.
Because they were asking you to lie. They were asking you to lie and say your child wasn't there.
They pretty much wanted me to say, they didn't say lie, they said it was inappropriate for me to discuss.
And so, but they wanted you to say, though, that your child wasn't there, though.
Right. Yeah. That I was there visiting. I took him there to visit with other people, and I said, you don't bring your child.
So they wanted you to say that you'd basically snuck your child in.
Pretty much. I mean, I brought him there to visit with other people.
Okay, so
bringing my son to visit.
So day one, you're in the hospital bed, and they're telling you, this is what you saw, this is what happened, and now they're trying to set dirt up on you, and so you start to really ask questions.
I wasn't going to say it, so they, you know, that was it. I mean, the truth, you know, the truth, I say the truth as I saw it from the perspective that I had, and that's what I stand on. And
okay, were there threats after that? I mean, now that you've been public for the last year or so, or now longer.
It just seems like, actually I've been out from the beginning. I just was trying to find other methods of doing things that had a little bit more teeth to it. We've taken up this issue since January of 2002. And then December, that's when we started trying to get attorneys.
So ever since then, something was wrong. I mean, you didn't see a plane. None of this happened. You smelled a big, fat, dirty rat. And so run over the high points. I mean, run over the key things that have happened since then.
It was like afterwards, an investigation is only supposed to take 90 days from the date of the event. So that's from September 11, 2001, 90 days from September 11, 2001. Investigation part for the medical was not over until 2003.
Wow.
And that was because every 2 months or close to the beginning of the third month, the paperwork would get lost. And then we had to start all over again. And then finally, when that was done, all of a sudden, I was supposedly been overpaid by the Department of Defense, a certain amount of money for this period of time, all of a sudden. And it's in total violation of their regulation. There's no way you would be able to go.
Okay, so there's all sorts of dirty tricks going on. Did you start to figure out that something was wrong?
Right. That evidently either I was on something or they were concerned about something that I said, because the behavior, it just all got very unusual. And most of the time when you see that, it can only mean a number of things. But again,
April, when did you first start to think, hey, this is an inside job?
Well, I began questioning about the end of November 2001, and that's when I began to go on a search to find an attorney. So it's not just, starting a year, or maybe people are just finding out about it, but it's been a long journey.
No, I know you've been out a few years.
I understand.
But I mean, folks have only known about you for a few years because you're kind of within the system trying to fix it from within. Okay, April, any other key points you want to add? And then you've got a legal defense fund address for folks that want to try to, or not even legal defense fund, a exploratory legal fund to try to get in there and investigate what really happened at the Pentagon. People can say, oh, there's no hope, so what? Hey, all of us resisting in a million different ways, it's going to bring the New World Order down. But then in closing, I want you to tell us exactly what you think happened on 9/11. Go ahead.
Okay. Again, for those that have followed and those who haven't, it's obvious by many of the testimonies, whether it was done during the commission, there were many contradictions in testimonial statements. The official story was botched up, and you can't help but conclude that there was a large amount of negligence and an intentional act on that particular day. But again, for us to bring a conclusion to the matter, it is going to take legal action. So we now have to bring teeth to what we're trying to do and pull together a strong legal team. So if you have paralegal skills, if you know a good attorney, please stand up, and volunteer. If everybody at the sound of my voice donated $5, that would be good. You can send it to Attention Elijah's Fund, EOISHA comma, S fun, and you can put specifically legal if that's what you want it to go to. And it can go to 1100 Johnson Ferry, F-E-R-R-Y Road, Suite 900, Atlanta, Georgia, 30341. Or you can call 1-800-983-6223 regarding where to send any other conceivable gift. This particular fund can take any conceivable gift, but our goal is to continue in the battle. But legal action is going to be the best way to get the missing pieces of the puzzle.
Okay,
so that we can bring a conclusion to this matter.
Bottom line, you personally looking at it, is 9/11 an inside job?
I mean, when you say that, in what respect?
I mean, clearly the official story is a fairy tale.
Yeah, right. The official story is botched, and I do believe that there were intentional acts on that day. And I'm working very hard to bring that to a conclusion and get those missing pieces to the puzzle. And in order to do that, it would be wrong for me to make a final statement without conclusive evidence. We need to get that conclusive evidence, and the best way we can do that is through litigation.
Well, I don't think it's a bad way to do it. I don't think it's a bad way to do it, but, I mean, when you got a duck swimming around in front of you quacking in the lake, you know it's a duck, and the evidence is just unbelievably overwhelming over 9/11.
It's blatantly obvious, there's nothing else to say. It's blatantly obvious, but, you know, we've got to stand up, and we've got to do something. And we can't just let it die down, and we can't just keep talking about it. We have to put some teeth to
I agree. We've got to keep it moving, or they'll stage more terror attacks. It's absolutely key. And the fact that we have exposed it has probably backed them off a bunch of other attacks. April, it's been great having you on. I'm glad you and your son survived, and thank you for your courage to stand up and speak out. And we really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
You bet. There she goes, Pentagon survivor April Gallup.